From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today, our weekly update of news and events from Central and South America and the Caribbean with our reporter from south of the border, Tony Solo, reporting from Managua, Nicaragua. And he's working on building a new school, or actually rebuilding a school, and that's the sound that you're going to hear over the course of the interview in the background. Maybe tell us a little bit about this. First, where can people see photographs of the work that's being done?
Well, and our website for the community work is www.superemos.com.
How you spell that?
S-U-P-E-R-E-M for mother O-S, superemos.com.
Very good.
Yeah, and if people are interested in what we do is we organize some secondary education courses for working class women to finish their baccalaureate.
You know, I want to do a special piece about this with you and perhaps Tony Montero also, who does the Saturday Free School, about alternative education. But okay, so let's jump into our work at hand today first. And we could start with the mythology. You know, everyone here has the holiday mythology that goes with the Hanukkah, Christmas, whatever, Santa Claus, etc. But there's more mythology that centers around politics. And while we're talking about that, let's talk about the myth that prevails in the U.S. and Western media, the myth of a conservative restoration, or, you know, it's the Empire Strikes Back kind of phenomenon that we're looking at.
Yeah, and my interpretation of all that narrative that you see reproduced in corporate media and many alternative media is that what you're dealing with is a kind of fairy tale about how somehow magically the right wing has in Latin America and the Caribbean has overcome the fundamental concrete interests, the material interests of the impoverished majority. And they've persuaded this impoverished majority to support neoliberal ideas that go directly against the fundamental interests of that impoverished majority. And of course, it's a fairy tale. And what essentially you're talking about is a liberal social democrat stroke right wing myth, an enormous propaganda exercise, with the aim of covering up essentially right wing fascism, right wing repression, right wing judicialization of politics through ridiculously biased judgments in the courts of different countries, ridiculously prejudiced management of electoral outcomes, as we're seeing now in Honduras, for example. And that's what the whole conservative restoration narrative is about. It's about covering up illegitimate, illicit right-wing power plays aimed at making it impossible for progressive forces to participate in electoral exercises, in electoral processes. And you can see the way that's happening, and there's so many examples of it. And it's difficult to know where to begin. Perhaps we should start with the Honduras elections.
Yeah, and we can also, in the process of doing that, you know, what we're talking about is where the U.S. proxies, in essence, and the local, you know, the hands of the local bourgeoisie have been turned back by the people, and some gains made on the ground by the people. As this pushback from the right comes back, and from the United States through the right wing, you know, there are policy implementations that go with it. In other words, it's purposeful. It's not just, oh, you guys were in charge, we want to be in charge again, but we want to be in charge again because we want to do these things that you are thwarting because you think they're bad for the people.
Right. Yeah, and in Honduras is a good example of that. Honduras, in that election, the right-wing president, Juan Orlando Hernandez, was the favorite to win in the polls, but the polls, as in other countries, were completely unreliable. And what happened was that for once a united opposition in Honduras, and that's the key to all these processes, when there's a united progressive stroke radical stroke revolutionary opposition, then the right wing is always in a minority. The right wing win when they're able to split the progressive left radical opposition. And you saw that in these Honduran elections. And what happened in these Honduran elections is that the electoral power, because it's the electoral tribunal is a separate power from the judiciary and the executive and the legislature in most Latin American countries. And Honduras's electoral tribunal essentially rigged the count. They didn't rig the vote. The vote was very clean and open and democratic and lots of civic spirit and all those good things. But then when it came to the count, as traditionally happens in Honduran elections, there were problems. And that everything then gets subject to negotiation behind the scenes that has nothing to do with implementing the will of the people. Forget it. And so what's happened now is that in the Honduran elections, the person that won those elections, in fact, Salvador Nasralla, has split from the rest of that opposition alliance, and he's now trying to make a deal with the right wing in Honduras, and that's exactly what you'd expect from a liberal social democrat.
Yep.
They will always make a deal with the right in preference to the radicals and progressives, because
right.
That's, you know, historically that's always been the case, right?
Well, it's about I'm in power as opposed to these policies for my constituents matter.
Yeah, and so who knows what's going on, what the negotiation is behind the scenes, but you can bet your bottom dollar it's got nothing to do with implementing the will of the Honduran people,
right,
as expressed in the elections of November the 26th.
Right.
So then why does that matter? That matters at a regional level, and also in this case at a global international level, because the right-wing government in Guatemala, for example, has followed the United States government in taking the decision to move its embassy from Tel Aviv in Israel to Jerusalem.
Right.
Honduras is unlikely to be far behind,
right,
because Honduras voted with the United States government in the recent UN vote on that issue.
Right. It's just going to be a sequencing matter. In other words, while we're still settling the election, let's not bring it up because it'll, you know, create a problem on the ground here. But this is a policy that we intend to push. And it may even be one of the motivating policies for stealing the election.
Who knows, Don?
Right.
It's all completely opaque.
Yep.
But I wouldn't be surprised if your observation were right. But the other thing to bear in mind is that Honduras is a member country of the Organization of American States.
Right.
And Honduras has been a key supporter in the United States offensive against Venezuela. We commented on this in the past.
Right.
But that is why elections in these relatively small countries, relatively insignificant countries, that is why these elections matter. Because if the executive becomes in the power of relatively progressive forces, then the United States loses support at a regional level for its regional and global initiatives. And so that's, you know, I see that as one of the main reasons for the electoral fraud that's taken place during the counting process in these recent Honduran elections. And it's very unlikely that the progressive forces are going to be able to overturn that, and they're just going to be subject to the same kind of repression that they suffered subsequent to the 2009 coup.
Right.
You know, and that is it's sad but true. That is what is going to happen. And very, very unlikely that there'll be any other outcome.
Right.
So then when you look at that in a regional context, I mean, what you're talking about is the institutional manipulation by the right wing of what should be legitimate institutional authorities, like the electoral powers, like the judicial powers. And you can see that across the region. And let's jump down from Honduras to Argentina.
Yeah.
And in Argentina, what you've got is, over the last few days, it was confirmed that various Peronist figures, figures in the Peronist political movement, including even a neoliberal like Carlos Menem, who was the Argentinian president for a couple of administrations in the 1990s, but including Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner and several of her ministers in her recent government, they've all now been formally accused of complicity in covering up the Amir bombing case of 1994. So that is a massive right-wing judicial onslaught on the main progressive political force in Argentina. And that goes together with constant repression now, regular repression, repeated repression by the security forces under the orders of President Mauricio Macri and his proxies in the different agencies that manage the police and security forces in Argentina, and also Macri's buddies in the judicial system. They are now going all out to make it impossible for Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner and her party to participate in the elections of 2000 that I think are scheduled to take place in 2019.
And as a matter of fact, just to give people a little quick background, because here's the landscape that the whole drama is unfolding on. And this is the battlefield for this quote-unquote conservative restoration. That would be, in essence, U.S.-backed coups, whether constitutional or extra-constitutional or other. In Argentina, you've got the presidential election in 2019, likewise for Bolivia. In Brazil and Venezuela and Mexico, they're in 2018. That's the sort of the landscape. We just had the presidential elections in Chile and in Ecuador, and then in Peru. We'll talk about that when we get to it because of the amnesty for Fujimori as people out in the streets today and yesterday. But so in Argentina, it's 2019. And that's likewise the situation for Bolivia. So we can work with those first because that's, you know, where you've got maneuvering time. Everybody's trying to position for that.
Yeah, so the Amir bombing case, as we mentioned last time we talked, was a horrific terrorist bombing in which many tens of people were killed and several hundred injured. And it was just a horrific bombing. Now, nobody has ever been found responsible for that bombing, although various dubious terrorist groups, many of them that we now know are proxies of the United States security forces, have claimed those terrorist outrages.
But it's 23 years ago, by the way. Let's be clear about that. We had
1994.
Yeah, we had right-wing governments in charge for a good, you know, I would say half the time, and at the time, at that time. And so, you know, this is before you had Kirchner or De Silva Kirchner or Macri. This is way back, and nothing was done. And as a matter of fact, Kirchner was the first one to try to do something about it.
Yeah, Néstor Kirchner and Cristina Kirchner tried to open up all the records of the Argentinian government in relation to the Amir bombing. But the right wing have continually manipulated the case in order to try and implicate, in particular, Cristina Kirchner Fernandez and her then foreign minister, when she was president, her foreign minister was Héctor Timmermann, himself a Jewish guy. And they've tried to implicate Cristina and Héctor in a cover-up of the case, when in fact the reverse is true.
Right.
They are the ones that tried to open up the case.
Right.
And so what you've got is a constant, as we said last time, And the accusation is against Hezbollah and the government of Iran that they somehow were engaged in the bombing. Now, when Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner tried, when she was president, tried to open up a dialogue with the Iranian government to get them to talk about what, you know, to give evidence about what their involvement was in the case, there was a strong right-wing offensive, a strong Zionist offensive against her, because they would, because the essential thing is that Israel wants to criminalize Hezbollah and Iran.
Right.
And what Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner and her colleagues were doing was opening up a channel of dialogue that essentially thwarted that Zionist plot.
Right.
So that is why the right wing, and the perverse thing about this whole exercise is that the Amir bombing was almost certainly carried out by right wing, at least with the complicity of the Argentinian right wing security forces.
Which, by the way, in Argentina, people should understand that right wing, you know, the extreme right wing in Argentina is extremely anti-Semitic.
Yeah. And when during the 1970s and the 1980s, the right wing used to torture their Jewish victims underneath portraits of Adolf Hitler.
Okay, and that, you know, you've got the boys in the band thing. There were an awful lot of those folks that went directly from Berlin after, you know, in 1945 that settled in Argentina. It's a cliche, for God's sake.
Yeah, and so what essentially you've got through the, as a result of this Amir bombing case, is an unholy alliance between the Zionist government of Israel, the imperialist security forces of the United States, and the essentially fascist security forces of the Argentinian state that were never reformed.
Right.
Because after the democratic restoration in Argentina in the mid-1980s, democratic governments never had the political power to do a purge of the Argentinian security forces.
Right, that's right. The same people that were disappearing people, they never got disappeared themselves, not even from their jobs.
Right, and so what you're still finding now in Argentina is that the Madres de la Plaza de Mayo, the Abuelitas de la Plaza de Mayo, the women who all through the 1980s and 1990s campaigned for some truth about what happened during the Argentinian dictatorship, they are still uncovering grandchildren that were essentially kidnapped by the torturers of those children's parents.
Right.
No, and that's it just doesn't bear thinking about.
Yeah.
But that is the reality in Argentina. And so it's no surprise at all that somebody who's essentially a fascist like Mauricio Macri, his family were very buddy-buddy with the dictatorship through the 1970s and until the end of the dictatorship.
Yep, made a lot of money with him, yeah.
And now it's payback time.
Yep.
And that's from their point of view, from the fascist right-wing Argentinian point of view, it's payback time.
Well,
they're going after everybody.
And let's go to the policy aspects of it again. Just to remind people, a couple of minutes ago, we were talking about Honduras and Guatemala lining up, you know, at the UN last week or the week before on this whole vote about moving the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem in quote-unquote Israel, et cetera, that Honduras and Guatemala has already announced that it is on board with this, and we're waiting because Honduras is about to do the same. That's what the dope is from everyone. You have Argentina at the time, back in the 90s, along with the United States, you know, on the program to isolate Iran internationally. You have this incident that where this entity, this like a trade organization, Israeli group trade organization, is blown up in Argentina, in Buenos Aires, in 1994, in July of 1994. It's blamed on Iran and Hezbollah. That's, you know, the blather that goes out. But no evidence whatsoever, no investigation, no process, etc. But used politically to enable the continuing shunting out of Iran internationally. As Nestor Kirchner comes to power, starts, you know, exercising foreign policy. They try to normalize relations with Iran, like much of the rest of the world was doing at the time. There's pushback from the right, and there's pushback from Israel. You have, as he opens the case and saying, well, let's find out what actually happened, resistance from the same people who are now blaming it on Kristina.
Right.
That's essentially the story.
So then, you know, so all of this stuff is very much part of efforts by the United States government to reinstate its control and influence in the region.
Right.
In an adverse environment where they're up against the sheer economic power of China, and also the growing influence of China and Russia and that whole Eurasian and Southeast Asian bloc in global terms. And so everything that's happening in Latin America should be seen in the context of the United States using its local allies to reverse progressive trends in Latin America. And you can, so it doesn't matter which country you go to. Let's go to Ecuador.
Right.
In Ecuador, you've got a president who's essentially betrayed his electoral platform on which he was voted into power, Lenin Moreno. And he was elected into power on a progressive platform, and he's now adopted a platform that is very much a neoliberal platform in cahoots with the local right-wing oligarchs. But in tandem with that, he's going after the political people who oppose his agenda politically. So he's gone after Jorge Glass, who was originally his vice president, and now Jorge Glass is, on the basis of no evidence whatsoever, just circumstantial evidence involving an uncle of his, apparently. And Jorge Glass, the former vice president, has now been accused of corruption and has been sentenced to 6 years in jail.
Yep.
So now what he's done is he's tried to ask for a legislative. There are all kinds of details to go into. But essentially, what's now happening is that the whole affair has shifted to a legislative trial in the Ecuadorian legislature. And Jorge Glass is going to have his opportunity to present his version of the story that was denied him in Ecuador's courts. But that's just another example of the way politics has been judicialized, or the judiciary has been politicized across Latin America against progressive figures. So then in Peru, what you've got is you've got a weird situation in which the former president, Alejandro Toledo, and his wife are in jail on corruption charges, but that's largely got to do with a right-wing offensive led by Keiko Fujimori, the daughter of the former dictator Alberto Fujimori.
Right.
And recently, what they managed to do was they managed to force a vote in the Peruvian legislature that threatened to depose current President Kuczynski. And what it looks like is that Kuczynski cut a deal with the Fujimori right wing to give an amnesty to Alberto Fujimori, who has now been set free from jail.
Right.
And there are massive protests across the country for that decision, because Fujimori, unless I'm mistaken, he was sentenced to 25 years in jail in something like 2004, 2005. And now he's been released after just serving 10 years of his sentence.
Yeah.
There's outrage across Peru because of the crimes that he committed.
Yeah, he, you know, so people are aware of it. His daughter was a presidential candidate in the last election there, and she lost to Kuczynski.
Yeah.
And so now they do this. Yes. She ends up in the legislature, right?
Her party had a majority.
Right.
So technically they had a majority. Right. So they were able to kind of set up this kind of legislative coup against President Kuczynski, who's by no means a wonderful character, but, you know, and he was the legitimate president.
Right.
And so now what Keiko Fujimori has been able to do she's managed to get an amnesty for her dad, at the cost of institutional legitimacy in Peru. So that's, and that's all, but this is all, why do we mention this? Because it's all part of the right wing backlash
that
liberal media like the New York Times and Washington Post and The Guardian and all the rest of them and many alternative media are trying to describe as some kind of legitimate conservative restoration, which it is not.
The way they're portraying it is as if there were a sea change in the political sentiment on the ground that's bringing the right back to power, as opposed to the theft of power from the people. Right, exactly.
If you go to Venezuela, for example, you find exactly the reverse. You find that the rampant right wing, despite all their best efforts, have completely failed to shift public opinion against the progressive government in Venezuela.
You know, towards the beginning and the middle of Maduro's term, you know, with all of the things that were imposed on the country, the support started to get a little flaccid. We saw that in the National Assembly election, for example, where people sat in their hands.
Yeah, the end of 2015, the opposition had a big win there.
Yeah, and so, you know, now, essentially, you've seen the people start to rally around Maduro and the Socialist Party.
Yeah, and it comes down to what are the, and perhaps I'm being naive and foolish in thinking this, but it seems to me that it comes down to fundamental economic interests.
Yeah.
And if you look at the forces that have facilitated the re-entry, if you like, of extreme right-wing forces into power and the oligarchy, the traditional oligarchies into power, where you're talking about socioeconomic classes that do not, they are afraid of losing their status and influence and control and well, and what they regard as their economic well-being to radical revolutionary forces. Now, in countries where some revolutionary process has had 8, 9, 10 years to demonstrate what it can do for the majority of the people, like Venezuela, then the majority of the people vote for those radical revolutionary forces. But in countries like Argentina, where the right wing are able to present some kind of credible argument that progressive policies have failed the Argentinian people, they appeal to the middle class, the petty bourgeoisie, and the political forces that represent those classes then align with the right, which give the right wing a majority, which bring the right wing to power. And that is what we are seeing in Honduras, where Salvador Nasralla has now cut a deal. He was the progressive presidential candidate in Honduras. He is now cutting a deal with, apparently, with the Honduran oligarchy, but in fact with the Honduran oligarchy's owners in the State Department and the United States government.
Right. And one of the things that I wanted to just point to, one of the convenient things about Odebrecht and how this is, you know, ensnaring Glass, and I assume it's an attempt to ensnare the left in general in Ecuador, is that this Brazil-based entity, they have accusations against officials across the board in Latin America, Maduro, all people that are targets or that they want to pressure. Nicolas Maduro in Venezuela, they have allegations against him, and they're nonsense. But Keiko Fujimori, by the way, in Peru, among others. Okay,
it's all about control.
Peña Nieto in Mexico, there's going to be an election there this coming year, and he's term limited out. You also have Juan Manuel Santos in Colombia, is also a target of this investigation. And, of course, we know what's been done on the ground in Brazil, where they had a constitutional coup, quote-unquote, and now they're attempting to keep Lula from being able to run. We have to go out right now, so thank you very much. I appreciate your time, Tony.
Yeah, you're very welcome, Don. Let's talk about this some more later.
You got it. And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.